I've always been busy. There's always been work on the horizon. It's only the last 3 years where things have been really unsettled within our industry and the game's changed. Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this episode, Ozzy and I wanted to sit down and talk about our relationship and journey through the industry, providing context not only for our story, but also to how the podcast came to life. This episode is produced by Jack Kirkwood and sponsored by The Gate Plus. Hope you enjoy. Now then, Ozzy.
Now then, Craig. The tables have turned on ourselves,
which is nice.
Yeah, I feel a bit of pressure on this one, actually.
More than the other ones?
Yeah, a little bit. Where do we start?
Well, we've known of each other longer than we know when we really know each other.
Well, I guess really, well, we both kind of took different paths because I'm a couple of years older than you. I knew your brother at college, went to different high schools.
Yeah. You were the big wig photographer, Craig Bingham.
Literally big wig. I had big hair.
And the van to
you always bring up this fucking van.
Because I couldn't believe that I was just dead impressed. I was like, his logo is stitched into his seats.
I had it all sorted, mate, back up north.
I mean, I feel like I remember being like, oh, he's actually like, well, legit, and like you had the monopoly of Yorkshire wedding photography, because one of the nicest photos of my mum and dad on display at our house is a photograph you took.
I think it's just because I remember coming back, went to college, found photography. I was lucky because we got space on farm and we had like a big barn. And she went, you know what, if you want to make a little studio, you can have half of that barn. So straight away, I was in there building a little studio set.
Because you studied photography at college.
Yeah. And then literally we're like, all right, that's it. That's what I want to do. So you know what I'm like, I get blinkers on. So that's literally what I did. And I made this studio on my farm. So I just started out with that really. But that were nice because I think it were nice to have time. It were nice to kind of like settle in. And I guess through photography, I did find a style. And it were, in many ways, now I look back, quite similar to my film, which is just stripped back, simple.
Personal stories,
yeah,
really.
That's what I try and do with the filmmaking side. So I found photography, loved it, fell in love with it, and then found out I was really great at wedding photography.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good at it.
So that were interesting, because that's good as well, because then you're able to kind of start handling people.
Yeah.
And be a bit more brave with the camera, start orchestrating some, you know, some stills.
Fast as well on your toes.
Yeah, and it kind of plays into that documentary thing of just like adapting to your environment, shooting. So wedding photography were for me a really good way of just kind of like using that muscle and getting into it.
Yeah, which is a completely different route for me.
Yeah, how did you get into it all then?
Well, I feel like it's such a cliched thing now, because I was growing up skateboarding and I was the filmer. And I feel like so many directors now have come from that background, because what it is, it was like pre-YouTube. So we're just making our own things, editing our own skate videos. It was also like Jackass generation. So, but what it was, these were all our own little films that we all made for ourselves. We showed our friends and our close friendship group.
Yeah.
No one else. And then like when YouTube came on, that was like, oh, I'll just put it online. And then that kind of, I just liked creating then. So I liked filming it, editing it, choosing the music, you know, even to the point where, if I was filming someone's skate part, I wouldn't even ask them. I'd just like put my own music on it. And it'd be my own little film for our community that I'd take pride in and show. And then that's kind of where I was like, well, this is what I want to do. I just want to make stuff and make film. But I didn't really know which aspect.
How old were you when that started?
So I must have been, well, YouTube came out when I was like 15. So I think I was like, I started skating at 12 and then took my dad's VHS around 13.
Yeah, because it'll all been all on tape.
It started on Hi8 tape and then mini DV.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of came from that.
So you got to grips with the camera really early on.
Really early on. But what I quite liked about it was you would shoot all day, you'd film all day, and then what we'd do is you'd mark the front of the camera with your hand so that when you were looking through the rushes on your computer, you'd see the hand and you go, oh yeah, I'll import that, rather than treading through it and watching it all.
Yeah.
And then you'd just use all the footage from like a year and just make montages and then fun things and, you know, all that kind of stuff, which kind of stems from, you know, Spike Jonze era of filmmaking and stuff. But it was just really loose.
But it introduced you to them. I mean, you watch skating videos, I watch BMX videos. I think two very different style of videos, to be honest with you. I think the skate videos had a lot more creativity, a lot more flair.
But it introduces you to like music and like, you know, creativity, not just looking at like as a skateboarding, but looking at different forms of art. And, you know, I wasn't really like, I'm really into films. I don't think I was ever like that until like later on when I went to uni and stuff, really. Mm. I was just more into like making shit for my friends to see.
Yeah. Really. But it's funny, I think riding BMX at skate parks, skating at skate parks, like I remember rocking up at skate parks and I'm looking for lines. I'm looking for new ways to ride this park and do some new tricks and be my own rider.
Yeah.
And all these things I'm also looking at doing as a director. You look at things, you're like, how do I approach that differently? I think being around that world, a lot of directors come out of that world because it opens doors, because you look at things differently.
Yeah, it's funny how you're like, you're coming from like the BMXer and looking at your lines. I used to look at it like, because I was never like the best at skateboarding, but like there was a lot of people I hung out with who were great. But then say I'd be like, I want to film you doing a line, doing a row of tricks or whatever. But I would be like, I know what they were good at and what would look good.
Right.
So I'd be like, right, maybe do this here and that there and that, then finish on that.
Yeah.
So I'd quite like to construct it, or I'd see them trying something and then be like, I'm going to film this. And they'd be like, oh no, it's not, you know, they didn't want to or something. I'd always like shape that a little bit more, because no one was ever really pointing the camera at me unless I was trying something and someone's like, do you want me to film it? But it was mainly me.
Felt sorry for you, mate. Do you want me to?
Do you want me to feel you doing this little thing here, mate? But it's funny that kind of way of thing. Like,
how it's different. How we kind of come into that a little bit differently.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is though. I think the skate park opens up doors like creatively. I think.
Yeah, and but there was no. I can't imagine what it's like now. But there was no pressure. We were doing it for the pressure was, I want to show my friends this.
Yeah.
I didn't care about anyone else.
No.
It was like our tiny community we had. It was all about us and for us, and didn't care externally. Now I'm sure it's probably a bit different.
It's just such a great chapter of life.
Yeah,
really. Before college.
Yeah,
just before you started thinking about your career, because you were swallowed up in just what tricks you could do.
For sure. So once you were embedded in wedding photography and photography in the north, you know, what was it then where you were like, then was like started filming things?
The old 5D Mark II came out, didn't it? So
yeah.
I was doing a lot of stills and then started doing a lot of like, I guess, kind of documentary stills on different projects, that kind of observational documentary. And I got invited across America with a UK cycling team to go from west to east, cycle all the way across America.
I weirdly remember this.
But they were like, do you want a free trip across America taking the stills of us cycling across America? And I were like, yeah, fucking definitely.
And how old are you around this point?
23, actually.
Okay.
So I'd had a good few years photographing by that point. I were like, yeah, get me on it. And then I said to this guy, I were like, look, there's this new camera come out called 5D Mark and we can shoot a bit of video. So he actually bought me the camera as like, that was a kind of gift to come on the trip. So he bought me the 5D Mark II. So on that trip, I shot stills and I kind of shot a little video. And then it would kind of get into grips of like, how do I cut this together? So that also were like the kind of starting process for me to kind of start understanding how to kind of chip away at a film. So out of that, we got the stills and we had this little film. And so I made a documentary. Then we had a little premiere, yeah.
Because I think I was it in like the old bar?
Escape,
but it was like you go up the escalators where the cinema is and you turn right.
Yeah.
Mate, I went.
Oh, did you?
But I'm sure I spoke to you. Basically, I remember it because I was like, it was like, you know, we didn't know anyone else who was kind of making films and I was into films and whatever.
There weren't anyone up north making any films or anything.
Not really. In our little, you know, but if you knew of it, you knew who whatever person was.
Yeah.
But I remember watching it and critique. I feel like I might have said it to you or critiqued it to you.
Type master.
I know, but I remember thinking that looked great.
But lacked story. Straight away, I knew that. I didn't know it until I premiered it. And I was like,
yeah.
And that were a real fucking.
I was like, that was. I was like, it looked great. It was dry. It felt like a big montage.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
That were a massive learning curve for me because I were obsessed with everything in front of the camera looking great.
Yeah.
And the stuff that I left on the editing room floor, which were the good stuff, the story that should hold this together, I was so precious about, didn't want to show anyone. So I didn't show it, didn't put it in the doc. But the documentary is all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's all the other stuff that I actually hated. But that's the real stuff that makes up a story. So that were a bit of a turning point.
Funny, I really remember that.
Yeah, that's fucking funny.
Because I must have been...
Mate, I do remember you coming up to me. I didn't know it was you.
It was this little shit.
Stuff knifing me out, didn't you, you little bastard? Yeah, that were you then.
Yeah, because I must have been at uni still.
Yeah.
Studying film.
Yeah, because you went to uni. I didn't go to uni.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What was that like?
Well, I went to York St. John, which is like the arts university at York. And I kind of went into it a little bit blind and not really knowing what I wanted. And kind of, I still wanted to be up north. But I couldn't afford, you know, it's not like I could have, film schools are just not a thing because you have to pay for them. And uni just, you know, I don't know. It just seemed... to be honest, I was a bit lazy with choosing universities and I just kind of went to that because it was like the closest film course. And I could still work at my old job, you know, in the skate park.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that, but it was a lot of theory. There was practical elements, but it was all, you know, it's still like shooting on tape and it was very TV driven. It's a very TV industry world where it was. But I kind of...
So how old are you? 21 then?
20, yeah.
I mean, that's it. That's early. I when you talk about that, so you, what you're doing there, you're studying film though?
Yeah, yeah. Every Wednesday we had a screening of a different films.
And that wasn't on my radar, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
No way. I was just like doing what I was doing. I wasn't studying film.
Yeah.
So at that age, studying film, I wish I had been.
It's quite good that you did, because you then have the innocence of it and you have the, you're kind of not like tormented by it, but then like you, because they're teaching you like rules that obviously can be broken. But if you're going into it thinking about rules, and, you know, sometimes you want to be breaking those structures and boundaries and going into it with a bit of an innocent eye. You know, sometimes you can look at things and go, oh, that's already been done, or this and that and the other. And I guess you never came of it like that. You just like...
I mean, yeah, there definitely is that innocence. It's more enjoyment, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was just constantly like, that looks like that, that's this, and... I don't know.
Comparing your work to
I guess
what
so.
You've been looking
yeah,
at?
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't get much stimulation from it, I don't think. Yeah. It was only really until I left and came to London where I got the stimulation.
But straight after you finished uni, what was next chapter for you then?
Well, while I was at university, I was really lucky, and my mum and your mum are florists.
Yeah, they are.
Well, your mum's a landscape gardener. My mum's a florist.
Yeah.
Owns a flower shop.
She used to be a florist.
Yeah. And obviously in that sort of industry, and if you're, she's had the shop since she was 17. So like everyone who comes in the shop, and you know, a small town like Pontefract, everyone knows everyone.
Yeah.
And basically someone came in to my mum's shop and she worked for Emmerdale at ITV in Leeds, and they just got chatting, and obviously, like, you know, mums do, my son loves film, he wants to get in. And we didn't know anyone, you don't know anyone in the industry. So she was like, okay, well, I'll meet him.
I wish someone had come in my door.
Yeah, she was like, I'll meet up with him. You know, I can't promise I'll get him any work experience or anything. But she was really nice and met up with me. And I just gave her a spiel. We chatted in my mum's shop. And then she was like, look, I'll get you in. I'll get you some work experience. But from that work experience, I ended up working freelance for Emmerdale for like just over a year while I was at uni.
Fucking great.
Yeah. So I was doing, running, and then did some location, script supervising, and then ended up being a third AD, so directing background.
Good. It's good eyes on set.
Mm. Etiquette, that's what it taught me. A lot of etiquette and how people operate in that environment.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of. But a lot of blocking as well. Like, it's all, Emmerdale's all, and those sort of soaps directed very, like, theatre. So it's all like stages and three cameras, all theatre directors, all the blocking's theatre. But they would go in, they would do a script read, they would block the action on camera, and then I'd get the extras in, see the gaps in all the camera works and place everyone in and communicate, you know, when someone goes here, Betty, you get up and walk across there.
It's crazy how you're given that responsibility at a young age.
Yeah, 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 it's crazy.
It's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of fun. Again, I say I didn't learn from London, but I always forget that I had Emmerdale and was there for just over a year.
And so what drew you down London then?
I met a girl at a house party called Harriet Towler from at the end of uni. She was a friend of a friend, and she was the office manager of Partisan in London. And I didn't know anything about that industry at all. I didn't know about commercials or music videos. And she was like, sack off Emmerdale, mate. Come to London with me. But mate, that Emmerdale job was 30 grand a year at 20 years old, 21 years old, living at home, was wicked. And then getting offered there was, you know, a runner's wage was split in half straight away. And my dad was like, you're an absolute idiot.
So you went down to 15 straight off the bat?
Pretty much, yeah. A bit lower than 15, but yeah.
Was that a difficult decision, or were you just like, I'm going?
It was weird, yeah. I'd saved some money I actually just did work experience, so it wasn't even a confirmed thing. So I did work experience at Partisan, and then two runners, full-time runners, left. I was really lucky. And then there was a job opening, and they just went, do you want a job? So originally it was just work experience for 2 weeks, and then a job came up, and then I was like, oh god, all right, I'll just move here.
Fucking hell.
But it wasn't much of a hesitation. You know what it's like up north sometimes? It's like I kind of stuck in a bit of a rut. And Emmerdale, you know, the person above me was like 10 years older than me. And if I really wanted to be creative, that wasn't the place for it, really. As much as I loved it, it's definitely treated as more of a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because how old were you when you moved down?
21, 22.
So yeah, I was 26.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I wouldn't have moved down because I were always anti-London, mate.
So what initially drew you?
I love my mates up north.
Yeah.
I mean, still do. They're like really big in my life. Nothing drew me to London. I wasn't bothered about it. I was making good money, making a name for myself up north.
And you'd already started making your own films, right?
Started making my own films, buying kit. Had loads of space on farm, just doing shit. My girlfriend at the time, she actually got a job opportunity at BBH London. And I remember like, I was like, all right, yeah. I was just thinking, I probably won't get it. And I would kind of settled it up in Yorkshire. And then literally about 2 weeks later, she got this job opportunity. She was going down London for 3 months to kind of do a bit of a process and to become a producer. And I remember just like driving home, like thinking,
there's two ways I could go here.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, well, what? I don't know. I was just like, what am I doing up here? I was very alone. I used to spend a lot of time in my studio by myself. So it's different now. I'm surrounded by filmmakers. So, you know, it's just overloaded almost. And I just thought, fuck it. I remember driving to her house and I got there. I says, I'm going to just come down London.
Did she put that forward to you? Did she, or did she just say, I'm going to move?
She didn't actually. She would just like set on moving. Maybe she was trying to get away.
And to give context for people, me and you, we knew of each other, but we didn't speak.
Nah, we didn't really speak, did we?
No.
Apart from that time when you were at that my screen and my documentary slated. I got a train down. We had a look at this like box in Shoreditch. Fucking rent, mate. And whatever. I had loads of kind of like just corporate work up north going on. And
so you're going back and forth still?
Constantly. It were like, it were a different time because I did a lot of, I'm something even now, I'm always doing my own projects, always doing like passion projects. But at the time we're doing a lot of corporate stuff. So I'm going back up north a lot. And I actually spent my house deposit on some Cine Prime CNEs, some Canon CNEs. Mum went, barmy. And then I was just shooting stuff on the street, man.
I remember because you had a...
fucking Ronin.
You had a Ronin, yeah. But what I can't remember is like then our initial link, like hookup. Like when did I message you or you messaged me? I can't remember.
I think you messaged me, wanted to borrow all my kit.
Hey, Craig Bingham's got a C300.
But to be honest with you, even though we synced up, you were still doing your thing. I'm a lonely guy. I like being by myself. Didn't have any friends in London, but weren't really bothered about it.
Yeah,
just like happy, whatever. At that point, I wanted to be a DP, actually.
Yeah, I remember you were figuring shit out. But I think, you know, I was a little bit, looking back at it now, being like, oh, Craig's a wedding photographer. What's he coming down here for?
Oh, right.
Probably a little bit in the back of my head was thinking that.
Right.
Didn't take you seriously, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Until you started shooting stuff up
here.
For
fuck's sake.
Probably, being honest, looking back,
yeah,
might have been a bit of that. Maybe.
Well, I think at that point...
In all transparency.
No, it's good. But you had your thing going on, didn't you? You know, you had your... Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know what a fucking production company was.
Yeah.
I just started shooting stuff. You brought me on a BTS for you, doing stills.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for like a credit card company.
For a credit card.
Or a startup bank company. Yeah, I remember that.
And that blew my mind. You're surrounded by 25 people.
Yeah.
All the crew, all the cameras. And I were doing BTS photography at that point. And this is like different eyes for me because I'm just used to self-shooting, cutting myself, doing everything myself. Suddenly you invite me on set. You're like, come and shoot me doing some work, Craig. And I got on set and that were a great way to see how a job works. And how a director works with the DP. And I remember seeing you that day being really impressed with how you handled the talent, how you handled the crew. And that to me was so valuable that day. Great day.
Yeah, it was
watching you.
Fun day.
Yeah, yeah. And it would, to be honest with you, I think that was like a reality check for me. I was like, I am so far behind here. I want to get in on this. I want to get moving.
Well, like you say, you got your fucking blinkers on then, didn't you?
But I remember at that point, you were really taking off apart as I'm making some fucking incredible work, especially music videos.
Yeah, a lot of music videos, yeah.
But you were into a different feel back then. Your work was goofy.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
It was like bold and it were different to what it is now almost.
Yeah, it was. Well, you know, from being a runner there and then doing my own work, because I was still young, really. And then I just got sent certain tracks. But I was just like, yes, I just wanted to, you just say, yeah, I want to make that. Yeah, I want to make this. And I made some videos for Wolf Alice before they were like big, the band. And then got on with like Jax Jones before he was really big and made some silly videos for him. So yeah, I was on just a different headspace, I guess. Silly, youthful, London... You know,
yeah, but
don't
high,
take it.
Really high production value, I felt.
But that came from the production company. That came really from, I guess, because when I was running on set a lot, being on set loads, you meet everyone, you see the standard. So then that's what standard you want. And then they surround you with the right people to make it happen.
So you were at Partizan.
Yeah.
How do you go from running to then being a director on the roster there?
Basically making stuff on the side. Met that band Wolf Alice through someone else. Basically just said, I'll make you a video and shoot it with someone else on a 5D. But then they ended up winning, Wolf Alice ended up winning the Mercury Prize, big music prize, and came back and was like, we have £10,000 to make a music video. And I thought this was like, whoa, you know, how are we going to spend all that type thing?
Yeah.
And didn't know what to do with it. So then when I was running at Partizan, I asked them if they could help me out with it. And they basically produced it all and made my idea really come to life and did everything for me. And then they started getting me music briefs and tracks while I was running. They took me off being a runner anymore. I got an offer from a different production company and was going to leave. And they said, don't leave, stay with us. We'll still pay you as a runner.
Yeah, so you were getting a salary.
I was getting a salary. It was a runner's salary.
Yeah.
But they were like, you don't have to do any running. We'll just let you, you know, build you as a director.
Start nurturing you. And...
Yeah, which is like, you know, I think they really took a chance, I think, and took a shot on me, which was really nice. But I think at the same time, a flip side to that, I think it made me a little bit lazy in my first early years.
Right.
Because, you know, I didn't have many outgoings, you know, lived in a shared place with loads of people and didn't spend much money and, you know, didn't have much money to spend anyway. But because I knew there was like, I was going to get a certain, like, you know, it wasn't much, tiny thing at the end of the month, it made me a little bit less driven, weirdly. And I think I was just more bothered about going out and I weirdly just wasn't as driven as I am now.
Yeah.
Because I just knew I was going to be all right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. So if a pitch came in, I wouldn't put as much effort into it. I would, but I wouldn't be as bothered as I am now losing a job. But it'll be fine. I'll be fine. Now I'm like, so it could become life or death.
Yeah.
You know? And I can take it really personally and stuff, but
felt like a different time back then, though.
Maybe. I just took it less seriously. I think I feel like I just fell into making music videos, and then you know, just fell into the commercial stuff.
You were great at music videos.
Yeah,
where at that point, because your style of films has definitely changed from that kind of goofy, quite dramatic.
Yeah,
you know, look to now something a lot more sensitive.
Yeah,
a lot more heartfelt. Where did that transition come from?
It came from the type of artists I was getting sent from Partizan, actually, and from briefs I was getting sent. So obviously I was getting sent a lot of like dancey stuff, which the Jax Jones thing came in and all the kind of early stuff I was doing. But then when I got sent a Callum Scott, no, it was a John Newman track, actually.
Yeah.
And I wrote a story. It was, you know, it was a powerful track, and I wrote a story rather than a concept. And then we won it, surprisingly. And then I ended up making that. And that really then cemented. I was like, I want to go back to storytelling. Like,
the boxer one.
It's the boxing one, yeah. I shot in Hull. And I went back up north to shoot it as well. Yeah. So it just made me feel like a filmmaker again, rather than something that's a concept.
Yeah.
And then from there, I started getting singer-songwriters and more emotive musical pieces that then kind of pushed the direction of the ideas to not be goofy, because they weren't goofy songs.
No, they weren't.
So it that kind of shifted that. And then I felt more me. And maybe that's when I kind of started taking it more seriously, to be honest.
Yeah.
But I flipped that on you then. So then when was it like, so you were moving to London, you were shooting loads of stuff. I actually remember a piece of work that completely changed my perspective of you.
Oh yeah.
Which was the RAF film. Was it the first RAF film?
Yeah. Yeah, somehow got that one.
That you shot with Jack Wilkinson.
Yeah, because that DOP. Was that were interesting actually, because Camp Down London, we're ringing a bar.
Yeah, you were a door knocker, which is good.
Just calling people,
cold
up,
calls,
emailing people. Suddenly realised, all right, production companies at the time for me were like, they hold the keys.
Mm.
They're going to get me in front of people. And I think looking for new talent back then felt different to now. Spoke to OB and really got along with those guys. And then weirdly, this RAF brief came in and they were like, look, we've got this brief came in. Do you want to pitch on it? And you are a bit of a wild card because I'd not done much. And it's a good place to be actually, because you can just throw your ideas out. And I think at the time, there weren't much RAF stuff about actually. Anyway, so, you know, I put a lot of work into that treatment. Just, again, wrote it myself, did a lot of it myself, won the job. And then suddenly like that, you're not shooting this one. You've got to find a DP. So I got Jack Wilkinson to shoot this. And that, for me, were a really strange experience, because suddenly I were on set and I couldn't touch the camera, which were great, but also a little bit frustrating. But it were a good way for me to work with a big crew. And obviously you've got these helicopters and trucks and tanks, and you've got to get this shit quick. So all that background of like adapting and just kind of moving on the spot, that came into play right there. And I didn't even know about publications then.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend's at BBH, still with her. And and then she's like, oh, you're on David Reviews. I'm like, what the hell is David Reviews? And then what are these, all these other publications? So then it were like, okay, there's this side of it as well that I've got no idea about. Another RAF pitch comes in, get that one. Another one after that, get that one. So, and then things were just building, do you know what I mean? It just started moving. But it's different. It's different to where you've come from, because you've been able to come through and figure out what is the set.
Yeah.
And I kind of got thrown on it a little bit.
Which I'm actually got envious about, to be honest. There's part of me that's quite envious about it. Because you're coming in it from a different kind of eyes to me, which I think I coming it from a more like, you know, knowing everyone's role and the etiquette of it all and getting that into pit, you know.
Well, I think we do talk about that with young filmmakers,
yeah,
of like, what's the best way in? And a lot of people do say, come through and figure out what you want to do out of it all.
For sure. But you just made stuff, which is the other way.
I think that's the other way, is to just be the filmmaker,
yeah,
and make stuff and understand it all.
Yeah. Because while I was coming through, you know, obviously in London, you meet your people, and those people now are still my people really today, you know. Reason why we're sat here is because our producer, Jack Kirkwood, I ran with him at Partizan. So there's two different routes to it.
Mm.
Neither's right or wrong. It's just like,
no. It's funny what happens though, actually, and obviously it's all changing now. But suddenly, especially like back then, you're doing these commercials, right? And it feels big, and you got loads of people running about after you, and you got people cutting for you, which I'm a bit pissed off about as well, because I like to cut anyway. But you're obviously in it all. Then you got your grading, man. Like, what the fuck's all that about grading? That's a real feeling it out process. Lucky for me, I got sent to some great graders.
Yeah.
And again, I love that side of it. Sound design, that's interesting. And then you introduced me to a composer, Gus Collins.
Oh, yeah.
So then that's another part of filmmaking. And you've got all these pieces. And I fucking love them all.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, I stopped the corporate jobs.
Yeah, took yourself seriously, a bit more seriously.
Stop
yeah.
doing weddings.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember finishing weddings, doing 22 weddings a year, and I had a year to fucking go. I had a year's worth of fucking weddings all booked in. And
wow.
And I had tapped out by that point. I was like, I'm on a new chapter, mate.
So you could see the year ahead, doing, and you kind of had to, I mean, you've already booked in.
Yeah,
so.
I had to do them weddings. And then
was this after the first RAF job?
Yeah, I was still doing weddings.
All right,
that,
wow. But you know, when we got onto that, that was when I took you seriously. Because I was like, now that's a fucking film. That's a good ad, that.
Yeah. Cheers, mate.
It was. And then it was, then I just, you know, you look at someone differently then.
Start talking to me.
Well, you just look at you, I just looked at you differently. I was like, oh, fuck, he's, because it was the first time I was like, that's good.
That's nice. I think, because where were you on that point then? Because you were
still,
you were,
music videos. I wasn't really hitting commercials.
But you were transitioning, because you remember you doing the phone stuff.
Yeah, but it was just never, it was never like serious money. It was always like drips and drabs of things and still scraping by and, and never really making a proper living, really. Yeah, until quite a bit later on.
I started just fucking sitting down at parties on me.
Yeah, which was great. But we started then hanging out a lot more. We kind of both broke up with our girlfriends at the time, did we?
So then I broke up with Charlie, or she broke up with me.
Whichever narrative you want.
And it was quite funny at the time. I was still doing my thing pretty much, whatever, Lone Rider, but I'd met Rob and Harry.
Yeah.
Met Rob, who's a producer, and Harry with this young director, who at the time I wasn't too sure of. Now he's one of my best mates. And you had just gone through a breakup.
Yeah.
Aussie fucking broke hotel.
Big mopey sod.
Yeah. Big mopey sod. You know, and we started having a few more beers together. I mean, we were chatting before, but this is when the bond, this is when it happened, isn't
yeah,
it?
So it's like, yeah, yeah.
Ozzy's heartbroken, I'm single, we're spending a lot of time with each other, it's raining, it's winter, we've got Guinness and ale. And
we bonded over something that probably wasn't just film, though, I think. We felt like a personal connection in some way.
Definitely.
And then just the film kind of came from that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... and then we fell in love. Well, then we moved in with each other, didn't we?
Yeah. Just as lockdown was happening.
I mean, yeah, we just skipped straight to lockdown. So we kind of moved in with each other, didn't we, at that point? And then, I mean, that were a great 3 years for me.
Yeah, me too. Not work-wise, but...
How refreshing were it to just tap out of work?
Yeah, I think we were lucky because I think we'd just done a job each.
Yeah.
Which were, I did my first ever TV commercial.
Oh, first. Yeah, so what was that one then? Was that with the B&Q one?
Homebase.
Oh, yeah, sorry, the Homebase.
God knows how I got it, running Tortoise one. But, you know, I loved it, great experience. That then felt, okay, now I'm doing commercials. Then lockdown happened.
COVID stole its platform, didn't it?
Yeah, which is really frustrating. And I just felt like a real, you know, it slowed me down a little bit.
Mm.
Because then after lockdown, I left Partisan.
So that's the freelance age. That's where you hit the freelance.
Yeah. Because I didn't work for a long time, really, properly. I was editing a lot.
Yeah.
And felt like an imposter.
Calling myself
a director, because everyone kind of started working again, really, when everyone could work again.
I remember, yeah, you being a little bit sad in your room.
Yeah.
I don't know. There was the pressure there. That's just the pressure of the industry.
Yeah.
That's what it does to you. It can really make you question yourself. And it's really tough.
It's weird. It wasn't like I wasn't pitching. There was some pitches coming in.
Oh, you were pitching on shitloads, weren't you, actually?
Yeah, so, you know, it's nothing on, you know, what the Partisan was doing or what I was doing. I just want winning them all. Was it in the right space? Or, I don't know, maybe I just needed a change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're a funny time, that, actually. Because I'm just thinking because I were running a production company.
Yeah, yeah, we've kind of overseen. Yeah, you were running a production, which is a bold move.
Met Rob and Harry. Call it Dad Bod Films. Something that don't take itself too seriously, and it were a good place to start making short films, which is at a point when I were like, right, I'm going to start making some shorts, writing some stuff. We got the insurance, we got producers, you know. And so we ran it as a bit of just a bit of a thing to do short films on, and then it became more a commercial production company. And you quickly see the perks of having a production company. And there's money to be made if the work's coming in.
Yeah.
All the money I made, I put straight back into my short films. I should have bought an house. But I didn't. I didn't really care. Still don't care, to be honest with you. I just put it into the shorts. So that's where my money went. year and a half ago, I've just bowed out of that company.
Yeah.
And I think, weirdly, me, Harry and Rob, we were just seeing things a little bit differently. So I just decided to bow out of it and just do my own thing. But we're still great friends.
It's weird you say, like, the, do you know, like, you were putting money in yourself and you should have done a house and stuff. But, like, from the outside of looking in, I really was like, that's what I need to be doing. You know, it really inspired me, really, creatively, to make something that's my voice and what I wanted to do, because I didn't do any of it. So, like, I think it was living with you, you making your own stuff, then really kicked me in the ass to then make my own, something of my own.
But you're one of them people who you can't, you've got to find it. Find it yourself.
Yeah. I can't be pushed, really.
But you did, so you did make your own short, and you were on your brother, wasn't it?
Yeah. And but that was just a real eye opener. Just being like, fuck, I need to invest in myself. But you know, I needed to have a bit of money to do that.
It's a great piece, though, isn't it?
Mm.
And it's definitely, I think it's a good representation of what you're about.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm excited to see the next one. Mate.
Me too.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Hey-o. It's scary though, making your own stuff, but
yeah, and there's a balance as well.
There is a
balance.
Make
your own thing and not being too detached from the external, especially as a freelance director, you know, because I guess that is then, after all this, is there's a reason why we decided to do this.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So we were sat on the sofa, weren't we?
Yeah, and
we're on a freelance WhatsApp group,
and I guess it came from, you know, there's 200 freelance directors in this WhatsApp group. It came from everyone spilling their heart out a little bit, people not working, people struggling. And I guess we felt like maybe there's a platform here to speak about it openly and transparently, to make other directors at the start, other directors specifically, not feel alone.
Yeah.
I think that was the key, I think, was it?
Yeah, the industry had changed coming out of COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And people were feeling the pinch. And there were a lot of people about to hang the coats up, weren't there, essentially?
Yeah.
And so we were like, oh, let's have a chat about it. And we started doing this in our living room, which was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think we realised as well, we had a lot of great connections with a lot of people that we could ask to come and sit down and chat with us initially.
Yeah.
So we kind of had that network around us and kind of thought, well, we should take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And just open... You know, I feel like we're quite good at opening guests up and people and making it feel like they're having a normal conversation with us rather than anything that's too structured.
Yeah, we're quite good at disarming people, aren't we?
Yeah, I'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, we started bringing them in, didn't we? Sit down. Have a
in the living room.
That were fun because I think we're lucky, me and you, because we've got a group of mates. We are like best friends.
And they're all filmmakers.
All filmmakers.
In their own respect, all community of filmmakers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we were like, fuck it, let's just start having an open conversation about it.
Yeah.
I've not had a job since.
I wonder how many times you've read that joke as well.
No, but we did. Anyway, we opened it up and it's been great, hasn't it? It's been good. And it's changed shape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what's important, what's important to you about this pod?
I see it as us still feeling connected to the community of commercial filmmakers. I say commercial filmmakers because that's, I guess, what we mainly talk about in this industry. But it makes me feel part of something, I think. I think that's what keeps me, that's what I felt when I first moved here. Like, this is exciting. I feel part of something. And I think as a director, especially a freelance director, it can be quite isolating and quite lonely if you're not working.
Yeah.
So it kind of, it makes me feel like I'm still part of it. I'm pinching it and I'm still connected.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
And it introduces us to, we're meeting so many lovely and amazing people.
Yeah.
And then you're part of the bigger conversation, hopefully.
But I think for me, one thing that we're always talking about is like, this is fun.
A lot of fun.
This is fun. And we don't want to spoil it. This is like, this comes from whenever we get spare time.
Yeah.
And it's also my way, it feels like my way of giving back to young filmmakers. And like, look, listen, I get emails all the time. Look, ignore my email. Just listen to this and you'll learn.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing. I guess we don't fully know yet, but I do hope it does connect with.
I guess that's where the point.
Yeah. And us learning as well. I feel like everyone I've talked to, I'm learning more.
Learning.
And getting inspired.
Yeah.
Trying to keep all that, our integrity intact with it all, which I think.
I enjoy it. I really enjoy talking about all the ups and downs as well, because it's fucking crazy at the minute, isn't it?
Yeah. Mental. Yeah, and a lot of things changing.
Yeah. And so you're freelance.
Yeah.
You've had a great year this year. I remember at the start of this year, you were absolutely on your arse.
I was skint. Yeah, I had no money.
We always talk about this pendulum that swings between me and you. When I'm on a high, you're on a low. When you know,
yeah.
And at the start of the year, I was like, I had this contract coming through. I had loads of cash. You were like, okay, you buy this camera off me. I was like, hey, up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was trying to sell stuff.
Do you know what I mean? But that's, it's crazy. Like some, my girlfriend's a head teacher, and she's like, I don't know how you live your life like this. To be fair, I've never been. I've always been busy. There's always been work on the horizon. It's only the last 3 years where things have been really unsettled within our industry and the game's changed. And it's not like it was when I kind of came into it or you came into it. Mm. You got to be independent. It's an independent director's game right now, I think.
Yeah. It's weird because I think it's like there's just different tiers. I think I don't know. I mean, I probably shouldn't see it as literal as that, like director's tiers. But I feel, but then it's hard because then the top, I'm not saying we're not like top directors, but you know, there's a top tier of directors, but they're filtering down into lower budget. It wouldn't touch a lower budget job, but who are now touching those budgets.
Because of the lack of work.
Because of the lack of work. Mm. And I mean, the main thing, the benefit of being freelance is being working with different production companies who get a lot of scripts in and can have scripts and make it bespoke to a certain director, and they can openly collaborate with freelance directors. And that's what's been quite great and special, because they get a script in and go, I know someone who can do this, who might not be on their roster. So I've kind of really taken advantage of that.
You've had a sterling year. This has probably been the best year commercially that you've ever had, which is crazy because for the most people in our industry, it's been the worst.
Mm.
Talk about what you've been getting on with this year. Mental.
So, yeah, well, I started off good with a tourist music video, which was really great.
Yeah.
But again, it's not like a financially great thing, but creatively it was great. So that like stirred me up really, really, you know, in a positive manner. I've got a... Well, then I ended up going to Jamaica with the Bullion Boys to do a anthem track with Sean Paul.
I like those guys. They're nice, aren't they?
Lovely, lovely lads.
Filmmakers.
Yeah. And I met them when I first moved to London as well.
Yeah.
So it was a nice, like, full circle thing. But that was really great. And then I've got a rep in Germany, and they've got a lot of fashion stuff.
Peoplegrapher.
Peoplegrapher.
Peoplegrapher, sorry, yeah.
Lovely chaps.
Cut that one.
Lasses. And they have a solid contract with a brand called CNA, and I do a lot of work with them for the fashion stuff. And then that kind of landed me then doing these Freeman's commercials with a production factory.
Yeah.
Mullen Lowe, but again, through the fashion kind of world.
Yeah.
Which was great.
It's great you've got that fashion arm.
Yeah, which I actually don't push as much website wise or social wise.
Yeah.
LinkedIn, I guess, is a different level of thing. But it's just basically, it's been a great year financially and work, but maybe not as creatively fulfilling as I'd like it to be. So now I'm now like with this bit of time trying, I'm developing something at the moment with Brother Films, who are great.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like that. So that's this documentary stylized.
Yeah, kind of very similar to the film I did about my brother, but about a rower rowing across the Atlantic. Yeah.
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 Brother are wicked, aren't they?
Yeah, and you're working with them at the moment.
Yeah. Just, I'll tell you what it is they love film.
Yeah. Well, they're champion filmmakers, I think. I think that's what their thing is, which is really great.
Yeah. And I think they're doing all they've been going, you know, I don't know, too sure, but quite a while, and they're doing all the right things, I think, in terms of like being a production company and not growing too big. you know, just working with certain kind of, I don't know, from the outside, it looks like they're just doing things right.
Yeah.
And also investing a lot in just short films, which most production companies just don't.
Yeah. Which you love. But then on the, just, I guess going back, you know, you asking about my year, what, like, I do think about freelancing and thinking it's great, but at the same time, you're not waving your own flag.
Me?
As a filmmaker, you have to wave your own flag.
Yeah.
When you have a production company, there's someone out waving your flag.
Right.
There's always someone out there selling you.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, as a freelancer, you've got to do that, all that selling yourself, marketing, all that kind of stuff, which,
yeah,
you know,
it's a lot.
Is a lot. So what have you gradually felt like the struggle has been?
This year probably started off the shittest ever. It has been a struggle where scripts would come in and disappear. And then scripts would come in, you'd pitch, and then you'd lose. Fuck's sake. I've never really been, I'm never too like emotionally attached to the winning or losing pitches. It's never bothered me too much. This year it really has, actually, because I put a lot into it and not got paid for the pitch and needed to fucking get paid for that pitch.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, what are we going to do? I mean, there's been no, for me, you've been getting loads. But for me, found myself probably in the worst position ever this year, actually. Well, I'm so from a farm up north, grew up with a house full of boys, three brothers. I'm the middle one, but my brothers are bruisers, fighters, really. Especially our Wayne. He's my younger brother, big lad. We've never seen eye to eye. Anyway, I kind of found myself like back home on farm, and I think he caught wind that I'm having a shit time. And I've not received a text from our Wayne in fucking 15 years. And he were like, he's a roofer, he's got his own roofing company. He's like, a couple of lads have let me down. Do you want to give me an hand?
Roofing.
So he's a roofer. And so basically for a couple of weeks, I were on a building site and me and him were going, I was just shifting tiles, mate, for 2 weeks. 120 quid a day. You know what I mean? Just like fucking...
Humbling.
Yeah, honest work. You get time to think about shit. That puts things in perspective, you know. You know, when we pick and choose about stuff, thinking about it back in the day.
Yeah.
So he'd pick me up in the morning and we had these like 2 hour drives to building site and it'd be just silence. There'd be no interest in one another, really. And then it wasn't until I was on this building site when I really saw our Wayne for what he wore. And he owns this company, he owns this roofing company, and he's a fucking grafter. He's a really hard worker. He's a crazy guy. He's a wild guy. He's a bit of a weird animal whisperer though. He's massive and he's a fighter. He always has been a fighter. And
a literal fighter as well, not a metaphor.
He fights. Yeah, he fights a lot. Always has done until recent years. Anyway, I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to go try and spend a bit of time with him, actually. So I went to his house and he was showing me his two owls. And he had like a freezer full of frozen chicks and he was feeding these owls. And so anyway, I just says to him, I says, I think we should actually have a conversation about us. And weirdly, I expected him to say no, but I actually think that I think he really wants that attention that I gave to him. I think he wanted it because I've never given him attention.
But does anyone ask him these questions or give him this?
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like these are the like, aspects of his life that maybe no one's touching or allowed to touch.
Yeah, yeah. So the next day we sat down in his kitchen. We sat down in his kitchen and I had loads of questions prepped because I wanted to know where all this animosity and all this fucking anger came from. And as brothers, like, I sat him down and it was quiet and we had a brutally honest conversation about him, his life, and what went down with us as kids.
Yeah.
We used to fight a lot. But our Wayne had not let go of anything. And he had held it so close and he had built it up and he was so angry about it. Anyway, he kind of just told me very brutally, honestly, like how he felt about us and his relationship. So anyway, so I came down London fucking a long story, this, mate. So I came down London and I listened to this interview and I was like, I'd like to go back up and shoot him, actually, and put these words to some visuals and try and get a good representation of who he is. I kind of picked up the camera myself. I got my old Cine Primes, took a red up there. I spent a week up north, up Yorkshire, with my brother. And every night for 5 days at dusk, we shot this film. And it was, and it is just like a camera that follows this like wild child, big bruiser, you know, amongst all these great, beautiful backdrops of Yorkshire, that kind of sits on this conversation that we had in his kitchen.
And the kind of moral of all this is like, you know, you've still made something out of a situation you initially thought was rock bottom and on your ass.
Yeah, it was kind of that thing where I was probably at the bottom of the bottom, and then out of it, I've got this beautiful, I don't want to say it's beautiful, but to me it's beautiful. Like, I've got this film.
Which then opened and has opened, started opening other doors.
But that's just because if I'm not doing that, then
what's the point?
I'm just not happy.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm doing this new short film. I have got no money to fund this film. So this is where we are, really.
It is. This is kind of at the point now. So hopefully it's kind of given people a little bit more in-depth context on me and you.
Yeah.
That's the whole point,
isn't it? I'm dreading listening this back, but quite good to talk about it all, actually.
Yeah. Because we drip free things through when we talk to our guests, but I guess it's good to have context of where me and you come from and why we do what we do and where we're at in our position in our careers right now.
Yeah, it better be fucking better than this, yeah.
Sure, will we?
Cool. Right, let's go get a pint in then.
Yeah, well, nice, Craig. That was very, very therapeutic.
Hey, what? It was lovely to chat to you, actually. Yeah. Good to sit down and chat it out.
Felt like we'd just met again.
Yeah. Oh, good, mate. Yeah, enjoyed that.
See ya.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.